Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
We welcome you again to the Mormon Channel and to our program, Past Impressions, where we study the history of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, looking particularly at important people, places, events, and critical issues associated with the history of the Restoration. I'm Brent Topp, Department Chair of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University, the host of this program. And with me again today is our guest, Alex Baugh, Professor of Church History and Doctrine and an expert on the Missouri period of church history at Brigham Young University. And Alex, I'm grateful to have you here to talk about some of the critical events in church history.
Thank you, Brent.
In our last episode, as we talked about the Mormon War, you mentioned that the massacre at Hahn's Mill was such a critical and pivotal point in causing Joseph to change his whole thinking with regards to what should be the saints' response to the Missouri War. Why don't you tell us about the background associated with the Hahn's Mill massacre, who Jacob Hahn is, and set up for us what's going to take place?
Well, I think it's interesting. I just discovered this here just a few years back, but Jacob Hahn was actually from New York, and he was a miller. And he made his way west like many Americans. He had a mill up in Wisconsin. And then I'm sure he's learning about some of the land and opportunities available even further west. And he comes down and he purchases a mill site in what is then Ray County. It was not Caldwell County, the Mormon County. But on December 7th, 1835, he purchased 40 acres and established a mill there. So he's there before the Mormons. And I think what's really interesting, Brent, is he's not a Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for years we just assumed he was. His brother will come down and mill with him, and his name is James. He does join the church. We have a Mormon indicating, I baptized James Hahn, and that's Jacob's brother. But there's no indication Jacob ever joined the church. But he establishes a mill, and it looks like it did a number of kinds of mill operations, grist mill, saw mill, a very enterprising guy. And, of course, when the Mormons now, in 1836, they create this area for the Mormons, a lot of the non-Mormons moved out. But Jacob Hahn said, I've got a pretty good business going here. So a lot of Mormons settle in his little settlement. It's a great place to live. You're on the river. You've got a mill nearby. And there's about 12 families. In the Mormon families in this area by October of 1838. But there's probably about 75 more families just in the vicinity. So it's a nice little Mormon enclave. A man by the name of David Evans is called to be the branch president out there. Again, everybody goes, why not Hahn? Well, Hahn's not a member of the church. So it's kind of a thriving little Mormon settlement, even though it's not from a Mormon, Hahn's not a Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been able to see if Joseph Smith, never been able to tell if Joseph Smith actually visited. It doesn't look like he ever came here.
Mm.
And maybe it's because, hey, Hahn's a non-Mormon. That's his little enclave. But anyway, so that's kind of the background there.
Well, what forces the hostilities upon Hahn's Mill? How does it now get caught in the middle of all of this that we now... All we have to hear is Hahn's Mill, and we think of massacre and terrible atrocities taking place there. Well, how did they get caught in the crossfire, if you will?
Well, that's an outstanding question. We mentioned in a previous episode that beginning in October of 1838, the Mormons in Davies County, under the direction of Lyman White, basically called for the removal and caused the removal of all the non-Mormons in Davies County. And And they left. And where did they go? Well, they went over to Livingston County. That was the closest place of refuge for them. The Livingston County citizens said, "What on earth are you doing here?" And they said, "Well, the Mormons have driven us out." And, you know, again, no one was killed. No one was hurt or injured. The Mormons certainly took advantage of the property and the plunder. But these people are refugees, if you will. The Livingston citizens said, "Well, gee whiz, we can do one better than that."
Yeah, we can't stand for that.
Yeah. So why don't we send a clear message to the Mormons that they're not wanted? And rather than remove them, there's this isolated little Mormon settlement on the very edge of Caldwell County, close to the Livingston County border. And basically, they went after these men, this settlement, because it was an act of revenge. They were defenseless. They really posed no threat. At least in the minds of the Livingston Davies County people now, and so it was an act of we'll get back and show it this way. It was terrible.
Well, now that's interesting as you say that the date of the Hans Mill massacre coincides to some degree with Boggs's extermination order. Are they directly related?
Yeah, I think for years we've just naturally assumed okay, October 27th. The extermination order is issued. 3 days later, they go kill them. And every shred of historical evidence shows that they didn't even know about the extermination order until after, the day after it happened.
So it was clearly just an isolated, "We're going to get back at you for
they
driving."
They totally justified in saying, "Well, if you guys, they're going to remove you, we'll not remove, we'll kill them."
Okay.
We have justification to actually go after these people. Now, the sad part is, Brent, none of these people were involved in the Davies situation.
Yeah, had nothing to do with it.
They were just sitting out there in their fields and property. They had nothing to do with that at all.
One of the things that we hear a lot in the church was that that the saints in Hans Mill were being disobedient to the counsel of the prophet and that they hadn't come to Far West like they were commanded. Why don't you tell us what really is the circumstance with regards to that?
Yes, Brent. In 1842, at a meeting, this is in Nauvoo, Joseph Smith, it's reported in the Times and Seasons, he said, and this is an exact quote, "At Hans Mill, the brethren went contrary to my counsel. If they had not, their lives would have been spared." And so any descendants of these victims goes, you know, unfortunately, Joseph must have counseled them to come in and they didn't do it. Well, the truth is, Jacob Hahn, since he's the leader of the settlement, was sent by the Mormons to go into Far West, and he came on October 25th. And he asked Joseph Smith what they should do, and he said, "By all means, move in. There, things are boiling. They're just kind of sitting out there." And Hahn went back, and of course, according to Isaac Leaney, who later talked about this, he said that Joseph Smith said we could stay and defend the community and just make sure we're, you know, as peaceful and law-abiding as we can be. And so, Brent, they didn't get the message.
Now, why would Jacob Hahn do that? I think it's important that we discuss a little bit our pop psychology analysis of motivations, but why would Hahn do that?
Well, I think it's kind of almost obvious. If the Mormons pull up roots and stakes and go into Far West, he's sitting out there with an empty mill.
Exactly right. That's his livelihood.
It's his livelihood. Yeah, so that mill turns 24/7. I mean, it's grinding him cash all the way through. So these guys pick up and leave. It's going to affect his business. So sure enough, what do? They decide to go ahead and do the best they can for self-protection. But I have to tell you, Brent, many times I've had emails and descendants of these victims write me or call me and say, you know, I just have such admiration for my ancestors, and yet they were disobedient to Joseph Smith. And I'm sitting there going, no, they weren't. If they would have known, they would have come in. And They just did not know the whole picture and Joseph Smith's counsel. So I have to say I kind of hold Hahn a little bit accountable. He didn't cause any of the problems, but had he given the right word and message, perhaps some of the lives could have been spared.
Good. I think that's a very important clarification. So did the people in Hans Mill, the branch there, the saints there, did they have any indication that they were going to be attacked or the hostilities going on? What was their mindset during all of this that's going on?
Well, certainly they're concerned because they're hearing reports of what's going on as well. Mm-hmm. And quite interestingly, some of the leadership from Livingston County came over and tried to negotiate kind of a peace settlement. Mm-hmm. And they said to kind of be an example that you or will agree to it, let us take your arms. So they actually tried to confiscate and did confiscate a number of Mormon arms. And all that was to set them up so that they would have less of a defensive mechanism against them once they came against them. Now, not all the Mormons turned those in there, but they felt like there was a need to establish perhaps a guard detail. So we know they had some men on guard. And they decided as a community, if perhaps something happened, that they would use the blacksmith shop as kind of the garrison, mm-hmm. where the men would come, and they felt like that would be a place of shelter and protection. Actually, it ended up being a
death chamber.
A death trap, yeah. And so they garrisoned some weapons there, and so they were cautious, but they certainly did not anticipate, I think, the extent of what would happen. The other sad part of this is just a few days before this terrible event, Brent, a wagon company of the Kirtland camp pulls in there.
The last people coming out of Kirtland, yeah.
Yeah, and they're only 16 miles away from Far West. Mm-hmm. They're almost there, and they pull in, I can't say it any better than the worst time. They mm-hmm. they came at the most inopportune time for the, you know, it's just they're going to be innocent victims just because they're there. Mm-hmm. And so that was another kind of sad part. But it did bring more into the community that could defend the community, but they were certainly there at the wrong time.
Hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the actual attack, the event. So the mob, I guess you would say, from Livingston County, how do they just ride in and start shooting, or how does this terrible event go down?
Well, it was well planned, and the day before, on the 29th, they assembled about 10 miles away and began their military strategy. But they began the attack, decided for the attack on the afternoon of October 30th, between 3 and 4 p.m. There was about 200 of these individuals. And I've been able to identify by name, Brent, over 50, so about one-fourth. And sure enough, almost every one of them is from Davies County and Livingston. They've come over and go, now it's our turn to get back at these guys. And you know, they take a major role in this. It's probably about half and half. But they painted their faces. They looked pretty rough. I mean, they don't want to be identified in case they're there's some legal action taken against them. But they assembled north of the settlement and began to assemble. And then David Evans and others saw them, wondered who they were, immediately cry for quarter, or what we would call peace. Let's negotiate what's going on here. And they began firing. And with this, the attack was on. David Evans called for all the men to assemble in the blacksmith shop and where they had garrisoned some ammunition and guns. And the women and children began to immediately flee. And fortunately, the mill is positioned such that they could actually cross make a dash across the mill race or the dam area and head to the south side of the hill and kind of make their way into the forest and into homes on the south side where they could be protected. But they were shooting at anybody and anything, women, mm-hmm. children, and so on. Mary Steadwell was shot, a woman, not seriously, as she was trying to flee. So they're after everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, immediately you can see their
intent was to just destroy
kill
everybody.
Yeah, let's kill at random. Mm-hmm. Normally, of course, in military order, they would just kill defenders, but mm-hmm. They're shooting at women, children, anyone they can see in sight.
You're listening to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. With me today is Professor Alex Baugh, and I'm Brent Topp, Chair of Department of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. Alex, you talked a little bit about now the Missourians from Davies and Livingston County are coming in and shooting everything and everyone that moves. This is a terrible, terrible time. Why don't you tell us what happens to the saints and who are those that were killed and what remains when the mob rides away?
Now, this is just so tragic, and your heart really goes out to these people. They're innocent victims at this point, but as the attack occurs, as I mentioned, the women go in to the forest, try to seclude themselves. The men enter the blacksmith shop. We can count 32 men and boys in there. There's at least three boys, so probably about 29, 30 men. Three boys go in there. That was picked because they felt like it was a good place of defense because the blacksmith shop had not been chinked or daubed. Mm-hmm. They had cracks in there where they felt like they could put their guns out and through the cracks and actually defend themselves. It proved, again, as we mentioned, more of a death trap. Eventually, these men, they attacked from three sides, were able to kind of come under the fire mm-hmm. and come right up into the blacksmith shop itself. And again, remember, these are long muskets. It takes a while to load them. Mm-hmm. So as one round would be done, they knew they've got some time to come under. Eventually, they just surrounded this blacksmith shop and began just sticking their muskets in and shooting at random. So it really, anyone inside could realize this is, we got to get out of here. And so then the men would, and the boys made a break through the back wall or the door was facing the river. And of course, as they made their break, they would shoot at them as well. So it's just bullets flying everywhere here. One of the most interesting ones, or sad, I guess you might say, is Thomas McBride. He was actually taking guard duty for his son, who was not feeling well, but he felt like he should come and do his part. He's 62 years old. He's probably the oldest one who ends up dying, but he makes a break and he's shot, wounded, but he gets up. He makes his way across the river, or at least to a house, and finds refuge in a house where he sees this little boy. His name was Smith. And he says, I've got to have a drink of water. And he gets him a drink of water. But in the meantime, sure enough, they begin checking the houses. And Jacob Rogers from Davies County found him. And he pled for his life and said, please, I'm wounded. You know, spare my life. The guy shot him. And that didn't do him off, and so he literally hacked him with a corn cutter. It's just a tragic, tragic, brutal death. We have, again, the story, of course, is told of the three boys who entered the blacksmith shop. One was Sardius Smith, the other's Alma Smith, and then there's another one named Charlie Merrick. These are all boys under the age of 10. And Charlie Merrick made his way out of the door, and they shot him. He died 4 weeks later, so a wounded little boy. But Sardius was unfortunately approached by a Missourian who put a gun to his ear and literally blew half his head off. And then little Alma was by the bellows of the blacksmith shop, and a man stuck his musket through, could see him there, and shot him and blew away a part of his hip. And that calls for another story here with his mother, which we can talk about. Isaac Leaney was shot several times. And Brent, the amazing thing about him is he has a bullet enter his back and come out his front. It went all the way through. Mm-hmm. And another one also pierced his body all the way through. So he had four holes just from a bullet coming in and out at the same time. And he had four other ones. He had eight wounds. They took him up to the Jacob Hahn home. The women took care of him as best they could, and he was given a blessing and miraculously healed. Years later, in Nauvoo, Wilford Woodruff was walking down one of the streets in Nauvoo, saw Isaac Leaney, and Isaac Leaney said, do you want to see the clothes that I was in when I was shot at Hahn's Mill? And I can't remember the exact number, but he said, Wilford Woodruff said he laid his clothes out on the table and I counted 28 bullet holes.
Oh,
I think it was about,
goodness.
It was over 20 anyway. I mean, the guy was just pelted.
Riddled, yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, obviously wore loose clothes and clothing and things, but there was some terrible, terrible kinds of atrocities that took place.
How many people died and how many were injured?
Well, there were 17 that actually died.
Okay.
From the attack. Now, a couple of these die a few weeks later. So they hang on. But that one of them was that Charlie Merrick. He died from his wounds. But Hiram Abbott and Benjamin Lewis die after some time. Two men, a man by the name of William Yoakum and Jacob Myers Jr. Both were shot in the leg and had to amputate their, mm-hmm. their legs. So they were cripples the rest of their lives. Three Missourians were injured, but none of them seriously. One man is told, we have evidence to show that one Missourian was killed after the attack. His own men mistook him for a Mormon.
Oh.
And it looks like he was shot by his own men. So you probably can't count that one. So really, they didn't have any fatalities on their part. It's kind of amazing. The Mormons maybe were, I don't know, maybe just didn't have the firepower
right.
to actually defend themselves all that well.
Alex, we've described the terrible, terrible tragedy that took place at Hans Mill, the deaths and the injury, the absolute terror that must have been going through the hearts of men, women, and children there. Let's talk about when the Missourians ride away. What is left, and what do the saints do?
Well, I should mention before they left, they actually plundered the homes and the tents and the people and took clothing and bedding and all sorts of belongings. They rode away, and of course, you can imagine that night. Here's these widows, women tending to the wounded. There was at least 14 people who had serious wounds. That, of course, will be okay eventually, but they're taking care of them. There's dead people lying everywhere, Brent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can just imagine. The next morning, of course, they knew they had to bury them. We don't have very many men who can help dig the graves.
Yeah, exactly.
So, mm-hmm. and it's cold. It was unseasonably cold. So apparently, as far as we can tell, there was a well had been dug. They didn't discover water, so it was a dry well. So the decision was made to bury those, bury the remains in this 12-foot deep well. And so can you imagine placing the bodies in there? Mm. Amanda Barnes Smith talks about Sardius, her son. She said he was laying in the sun, and I just couldn't stand to see him anymore. And it was even worse to put him in the grave. And Joseph Young, Brigham Young's brother, who was part of the Kirtland camp, put him on a kind of a plywood piece of wood and slid him in. She said it was mm-hmm. the most horrific thing she'd ever witnessed. And then she said, and I covered up the grave.
Wow.
So it was tough. And then for the next several months, they're trying to get out of the state and they're in a terrible condition. And so it was, winter's on and they did the best they could do in terms of survival, but of course made their way with the Mormons outside the state beginning basically most of them in February.
Now, you mentioned Amanda, but I'm sure that there are other men and women of the Hans Mill massacre settlement there that inspire you. Who are some of the heroes that you have, and how are you inspired by how they dealt with that terrible tragedy?
Well, Amanda is my main hero here. She lost her husband, Warren, brutally killed, and his body is boots taken and everything, her son Sardius killed, and then she shows her incredible compassionate love as a mother for Alma, and perhaps many are familiar with the story, but she saw his hip situation, felt like something needed to be done to save this boy's life and to save his hip, and she bears an incredible testimony and record of her being able and actually being led, she felt, by divine inspiration to be able to kind of fashion, I guess is the best word, Brent, a kind of a makeshift poultice that she mm-hmm. compacted into the wound. And within 5 weeks, this little boy's running around. I mean, it's mm-hmm. an absolutely miraculous story. And Brent, Every Memorial Day, I go to Richmond, Utah. My wife's family's buried up there in Cache Valley, and we always stop at Amanda Smith's. Amanda Barnes Smith is buried up there. And just this last Memorial Day, I put a rose on her grave. This woman, to me, is the epitome of sacrifice and commitment. And I hope her descendants realize what she has done and what the gospel meant to her. It's just very moving to me. I have to say maybe just one thing. After the attack, the marauders, well, the state required a military occupation of the Mormon settlements. So many of the men who actually carried the attack held out at the mill. And they were persecuting them still some more, and her horse was stolen, and she was having a terrible time. And she said, and they couldn't even pray. The military leaders said, "You Mormons, quit your praying." Kind of a sad commentary as well. But finally, she said, "I just vent my feelings to God. I just had had enough." And she said she heard a voice repeat to her the following verse. This is the seventh verse of How Firm a Foundation. "That soul who on Jesus hath leaned for repose, I cannot, I will not desert to its foes. That soul, though all hell should endeavor to shake, I'll never, no never, no never forsake." It was at that point she said, "I knew I could pick the pieces up and still make my life meaningful and you know, overcome these incredible difficulties." And in her dying testimony, she said, "God has never forsaken me. Ever." Yes, hardship, incredible persecution, but I've seen the blessings of the atonement and the gospel in my life. It's a powerful testimony.
That is so incredible. Do we have a record of how the other survivors of Hans Mill fared afterwards? And you mentioned some that talked about it at Nauvoo and later. What about others? Did they fare as well as Amanda?
Well, I think we can just safely say I focused kind of most of my research on them. But the women, they remarried. Most of them were able to get, secondary husbands, I guess you might say, to help pick up the pieces. But they move on, Brant. They knew. The amazing thing is they don't apostatize. It's kind of like the Willie and Martin group. They found God in their adversity. And I think that's an important point to make. These people held on. They knew the gospel was true, and this is what we have to suffer sometimes for the truth.
I think that's probably one of the greatest messages of all, that tragedy can also yield great triumph in people's faith and determination. And I think Hans Mill, as terrible as it was, I think the example of individual faith and testimony and courage and commitment is pretty remarkable. In the last minute that we have, Alex, you have studied this probably more than anybody else in the church. What would you say is the great message, the great legacy, the great lesson that you have learned from Hans Mill?
Well, again, we can never forget it, ever. These people paid a huge price for their testimony, and we don't dwell on the fact that who's responsible and these terrible Missourians. Now, that doesn't mean the early Mormons didn't feel some negative feelings toward Missourians, but that's a long time ago, and we need to bury the hatchet. That generation that caused that group that caused that terrible scene of bloodshed, they're gone. And we just need to remember the saints who suffered for the cause of Christ, and at the same time realize, that's gone. We don't need to harbor the feelings against anyone for that terrible tragedy, and just acknowledge the fact that these people left a faith and commitment that we should exemplify.
I think that's well stated. Thank you so much. It's both informative and inspiring. I'm Brent Topp, your host of Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel, inviting you to join us again in a future episode as we study the history of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.